This week, please come along with me as I meditate on the concept of the artist residency and how an episode of The Twilight Zone about department store mannequins that I watched on New Year's Day became a poignant analogy for me about the importance of getting out of your rut and spreading your wings creatively. I'll also tell you what it's like to try and make your work in an off-the-grid Provincetown dune shack. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Pep Talks for Artists, a podcast offering small words of encouragement to all those shuffling along the artist's road. I'm your host, Amy Toludo. Today, I want to talk about artist residencies, because they're a nice thing to dream about when you feel stuck or in a rut, or life is just wearing you down with its mundane pressures. So, in case you've never been to one, an artist residency invites artists or writers or composers or all three to a place hosted by an organization that provides studio space, living space, and a place to make or receive meals for a set amount of time, usually between 2 weeks to a month, but some can be longer. Some are free, and those are often harder to get into. Some are paid to stay, some accept lots of artists each session, and some only take small groups. Some only take one at a time. They are located all over, in rural areas, on the beach, near the forest, in the desert, on an island, or even in the Antarctic. And sometimes I find myself scrolling Instagram on a dark day in February or March, just wondering, what would it be like to make art in a lighthouse, or in Robert Rauschenberg's old fishing shack? Or in a Florida swamp, or in a small RV in a Utah ghost town, or on an island in Italy. Sure, there are the big ones like McDowell and Yaddo, but these are uber competitive and hard to get into. And there are so many more smaller, off-the-beaten-path, secret outposts that will happily welcome an artist to try on their lifestyle for a bit. As an artist, it's so helpful to get out of Dodge now and then, to pack up your hobo stick and bandana and hit the road for new sights and sounds. Myself, I've been to six. U-Cross in Wyoming, which was small and free, Vermont Studio Center, which was large and pricey, the Saltonstall Foundation for New York State artists, small and free, Birdcliff in Woodstock, medium and cheap, a bird sanctuary in Rhode Island, dreamy but closed, and last but not least, a very off-the-grid dune shack in Provincetown, party of one. I applied for a dune shack one forlorn gray winter when I was stuck inside during yet another snowstorm with my young son, and I was looking for something doable. They let you apply for just 1 week, and I thought to myself, I can manage being away for a week. I mean, many other parents were going on business trips for a week or more, and their families weren't imploding in their absence. So I got accepted, and I was assigned a shack for 1 week in July on the duny border of Provincetown and Truro. And you may remember, Truro is the home of Edward Hopper. The shack was maintained by the Peaked Hill Trust. They say it Peaked, a part of the Cape Cod National Seashore. I'm completely convinced I got in because most of my application statement was a bit of a macho flex about how unfazed I'd be by ticks, mice, roof leaks, and no electricity. AKA, I won't be a big city baby. In this particular residency, anyone can apply in any of the arts or sciences, generally. You just have to have a good reason for why you'd take the shack for a week. The one I was given was called Ray Wells, but others were named whimsical things like Thalassa and Euphoria. Many of the dune shacks were made in the 1930s and were repurposed Coast Guard sheds, or they were cobbled together from shipwrecked driftwood in a hodgepodge fashion. Most were small, but Ray Wells' shack was pretty big, as I discovered. When I arrived in town, an older guy picked me up in a Leviathan of a truck with deflated tires to haul me and my stuff out to the shack over the sand roads that crisscrossed the dunescape. Ray Wells' shack rose up from the dunes like a spindly brown spider, held high up off the sand by tall wooden support legs. When I got inside, I discovered there was a much smaller Coast Guard shack inside Ray Wells, complete with original shingles and a front door that served as the bedroom. Later additions had been built around it, kind of like a big hug, with a full kitchen and wraparound enclosed porch. On the porch were wall-to-wall windows that looked out over the Martian landscape and opened and hooked to the ceiling with eye hooks. Once my dune's chauffeur left, I was utterly alone. The binder on a table said, in an emergency, to call 911 and, quote, give coordinates. Not a soul was seen walking, and the nearby beach was littered with fish skulls and dolphin vertebra and every shell you could think of, because no beachcomber ever combed there. There were so many seals bobbing in the water, you would literally have had to say, excuse me, to go swimming. I was outnumbered. As the days of the week wore on, I fetched water from a well you had to pump by hand, trudging up and down a hill of sand. The sand was so hot, I had to wear socks with sandals or full-on welly boots to not get burned. I got so used to being alone that one day I found myself a wanderin' along the beach in my nightgown and wondered, is this how insanity starts? Signs of life were there, though. Once a day, a dune buggy would drive by, stuffed to the brim with tourists, pointing at my shack. And for the first half of the week, I would retreat and scuttle back and hide away from the windows. There were no curtains, and I felt kind of like an animal in a zoo. But then I noticed myself in the second half of the week, craning my neck for them, waiting for them at the windows eagerly, longing to see any other person for even a few moments. There was a single white-footed dune mouse living in the shack that had grown bold with squatters' rights, living only with sporadic human company. And every night, these bombastic squeaks would echo throughout the inky blackness as I lay there in my bed, terrified. I know I said on my application that I wouldn't be scared of mice, but this one just seemed so aggressive. By day, I would wander the endless dunes, like some kind of Lawrence of Arabia in my sock sandals, marveling at the strange sand mountains all around me. Some of them would have these caved-in tops that made them look like moon craters. Or some were like self-contained cylinders with a sprinkling of plants on the top. There were wild dune roses and twisty scrub pines perched atop sand mounds too. Everything was thriving in this strange sandy world. At a certain time in the afternoon, the seals would commence their barking and would all shoot out of the sea and plop down on an exposed sandbar in a process I found out was called hauling. This huge mound of seal flesh, or blubber, would rise up from the waves, flapping their tails and making a loud racket of pure seal joy. Because I was there over the week of July 4th, one night, tiny distant fireworks popped up in my window from Provincetown proper, and the sight was comforting in my isolation chamber. When the last day came, a French lady named Genevieve came in the lumbering dune truck to fetch me and scolded me for being too soft-hearted to trap the mouse. I wonder sometimes if I would reapply there. To be honest, most of me balks at outhouse living again. But I think that there was something profound about being the last person on Earth for a week. To be the sole representative of a species, and still daring to make art all the while. It wasn't maybe a resume belt notch residency, but still, it was a deeper, stranger type of experience that I will remember forever. A while back, a bunch of us got together to compile a list of residencies on the Clubhouse app. Our list is up on the Pep Talks for Artists Instagram in the link tree, if you'd like to peruse. The big names are on there, of course, but tons of smaller, more unusual ones are too. Also check out Artist Communities Alliance at artistcommunities.org to search their huge database of residencies. If you've never been to one and you're worried about how you'd swing it, time-wise or money-wise, don't worry. Not all are expensive. Some are even free, and not all are month-long. Some now are finally heeding the need for shorter stays for artists with jobs and or small kids by offering week and two-weekers. Anybody could sneak away for a week, right? And being a busy person, you'll use that time to max effect. Your week would be like someone else's 2 weeks, because you're going to be like turbocharged. Or you may be thinking, why go away to make art in some strange place where I don't have all my stuff around me? And I get it. Your home studio is ideal for cranking out stuff under a deadline, but being somewhere new will, just by nature of changing your surroundings, generate new ideas. In the book Wired to Create, authors Carolyn Gregoire and Scott Barry Kaufman talk about this benefit of the new environment. Quote, from life events that force us to rethink our most deeply ingrained beliefs about the world and our place in it, to eye-opening journeys to new places and unfamiliar psychic landscapes, it's what disrupts the familiar that triggers new ways of seeing things. Any life experience, whether traumatic or ecstatic, that diversifies our repertoire of experiences and pushes us outside of habitual thought patterns can lead to enhanced cognitive flexibility and creativity. End quote. Take immigration, for example. The authors say, quote, we can actually look to history to see how the unfamiliar breeds creative achievement. In a 1997 study, psychologist Dean Keith Simonton found that periods of immigration have preceded periods of extraordinary creative achievement. Why? Immigrants bring fresh ideas, culture, customs to an existing cultural infrastructure, creating diverse experiences for everyone in that culture, and thus triggering creative ways of thinking. If habit and convention are the killers of creativity, then it's the unfamiliar that gives birth to great ideas and innovations. We know that habit and banality can seriously hamper creative thought. After all, how do we make new connections out of what is stale and uninspiring? And what's new, novel, and unusual can help us hatch our most inventive ideas. As research has shown, creativity benefits from an outsider's mindset. End quote. Okay, I'm gonna switch it up a little bit here, but stay with me. Last New Year's, I found myself watching the Twilight Zone marathon, as one does, and this episode called The After Hours came on. If you've never seen it, the episode is about a group of mannequins in a department store that take turns turning into real flesh and blood people and walking around the world, beyond the store, for 1 month each. One mannequin, named Marcia, is out on her tour, but she forgets that she is or was a mannequin, and she overstays her month by one day. Vaguely confused, she winds up back at the store looking for a golden thimble. The other mannequins try to jog her memory, and eventually she remembers and submits to them.
You're with the outsiders, but you were due back yesterday and you didn't show up. It was my turn starting last night. I'm 1 day delayed already.
I'm sorry, I forgot. When you're on the outside, everything seems so normal.
Well, no serious harm done.
And she freezes in place with her arms bent and hands rigid in front, like a true mannequin.
Enjoy yourself, Marcia.
Fun?
That was so much fun.
Then everybody cries farewell to another mannequin who's been waiting for her turn, as she happily goes off on her own jaunt to be a real person out in the world.
I'll see you all in a month.
Although I think this episode is supposed to be maybe a comment on consumerism or capitalism, the thimble she wants is gold. She's in a department store drawn there by an ad. For me, the episode is really about escape. Escape, or the joy of leaving a life of routine and obligation and duty to just be free and live a different, more carefree kind of life for a while. And in this way, the episode totally reminded me of what it feels like to go to an artist residency. You know, that feeling of leaving behind the things you have to do for the things you want to do, and being allowed to just do that. Like, no more hauling yourself onto the sandbar of your day job where no one really knows you're an artist. Or hanging up your butler's livery and leaving behind the cooking, laundry, and childcare to just wear the same sweatshirt for 2 weeks in a row and stay up all night working, and just wake up and work completely on your own whim. Some of them will even cook your meals. Like Marcia, why not give ourselves a taste of how it would be if we could focus on art exclusively for a bit and not have to squeeze it in between the cracks of life for a couple of weeks or a month. It would be ever so much fun. You've been listening to Pep Talks for Artists. If you'd like to check out our Instagram, please find us at Pep Talks for Artists. We really appreciate you stopping by, and we'll see you next time.